Excuse me, sir. Can
Board of Directors. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the September 9th Board of Directors meeting for the Yolo Transportation District. Let the record reflect that it is 6:01. We call the meeting to order, and I'm looking to my right and left, and we have a quorum with all of our directors present. And with that, I will look and entertain a motion to approve our agenda for this evening.
So approved.
So seconded.
Motion by Director Stoller, second by Director Warren. Any other comments, questions on our agenda? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, abstained. Motion carries 5-0. Thank you. Next, we're on to agenda item number 3, which is general public comment. General public comments for any item not listed on the agenda or for an item that is on the consent calendar. If you can save for Ben later on this evening, you may use up your time now. With that, I will open up general public comment.
And Mr. Chair, while our first speaker is coming in, just for the clerk of the board, I want to note that Manpreet Ark, who is our alternate from the conference, is here.
Welcome. Alan Hirsch Davis. First, I want to note that Dixon has approved a 3,000 home, probably 8,000 resident development. And we have no bus service on the I-8 corridor servicing those people to get to the city. It's trivial. We're all concerned about congestion and whatnot. We're building this lane, which is going to be kind of transit. I suggest that we need to think out of the county lines to think about regional transit and not just YOLO transit. Second, I was in Reno this last week, about 5-6 days up there trying to register Democrats at the university and canvassing. I stayed up a couple extra days, and I took the train back. I actually took the bus back because the train was totally inconvenient. Started at 8 in the morning. I had to stay overnight to take that. It took 4.5 hours. The bus was only 3 hours. The bus was a third of the price of the train, but it dropped me off on Richard Boulevard, 2 blocks from the light rail station, which was a 25-minute walk from the train station. So I couldn't get from Sacramento to Davis. It took me 2 hours to get there. I was going to take transit. Someone picked me up and drove there. I note that the Reno bus stop has no shade. Capricorn bus stops there, but there's no shade, no place to sit. If we really want to get people off the freeway, we need to provide amenities for them. And I think we are treating bus riders as second-class citizens, shadeless bus stops, inconsiderate schedules that drop you off in the middle of nowhere. I suggest on this day, a week without transit, you commit, each of you, at least one day, you take the bus one day and try to see how that works and see about the amenities of getting to and from the bus. I would urge you to do that. The bus ride from Reno is faster than the train, third the cost, but the amenities, but it doesn't connect with anyone because no one is thought to coordinate that with other means of transit. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan. Do we have any other in-person public comments? Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, Chair Chapman and members of the YOLO Transportation District Board and staff. My name is Michael Barnbaum, and as you remember, 2 months ago, I commented about the need of a ballpark shuttle as the A's are moving to West Sacramento next season, and the games are counting down as they are at the Oakland Coliseum in Alameda County. I did have a working meeting one-on-one with Chief Operating Officer Daisy Romero about this and some transit issues here in Yolo County in wake of the upcoming season, which will feature two teams, the A's and the River Cats. So 5 points I wanted to summarize. That came out of the meeting. It was not an item in the budget the board approved in its revised budget, so there is no service included for a ballpark shuttle. The issue, though, going forward is not so much funding per se for the district, but it's more vehicle availability and number of vehicles in the fleet. Number of operators or recruitment of operators in the future if such a shuttle was just independently operated by the Yolo Transportation District with no other operator involved. And four, there will be some service restoration as you did approve in your revised budget for the city of West Sacramento. More likely than not, but I'm not 100% sure on this, and either this came out of our meeting, will be restored in January, just before the season. And fifth is, once the season does start, perhaps the thing to perhaps begin doing is promoting the service out on the street from opening day forward as part of between inning, let the audience know what's going on in and around West Sacramento. That could be one of the things as a promotion in the venue. So that's what came out of our working meeting. Just wanted to let you know that, but I know it will be a continuing topic as we get closer to 2025 opening day. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Do we have any further in-person public comment? That's a very kind way of cutting somebody off.
Look, I need a gown.
Yeah.
You know, where's our friends from Moscow?
Yeah, that would do the trick. Do we have anyone online with general public comment?
We do not have any hands raised online at this time.
All right. Thank you. With that, I'll close general public comment, and then Director Stoller had a quick comment.
You know, Mike Birnbaum learned a thought to me, which I wish to share now because I'll forget it pretty soon. And that is, as our representatives of the Capital Corridor Board know, helping to recover from the loss of patronage on the train has been somewhat ameliorated by special event runs to the arena down the Bay Area. Well, with the river, with the A's coming to Sacramento, it seems to me the Capital Corridor should consider special trains, because I'm sure Bay Area fans are still going to want to come up and watch the A's. So that might be an opportunity to share. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stoller. Okay, that's going to bring us to agenda item number four, our consent calendar. Any of my colleagues have been intent to pull an item for discussion? Okay, seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to move the consent calendar.
I move.
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Director Hurley, a second by Director Ferris. Any further conversation, comments on our consent calendar? All right, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, abstained, motion carries 5-0. Thank you. Okay, we're on to agenda item number five, our regular calendar. The first item is appoint Frank Reyes, as at-large member of the Citizens Advisory Committee. Looks like our Executive Director, Autumn Bernstein, is going to take this one.
Yes, thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And we do not have any slides for this item, so we can keep the slide down for now. In 2023, our board took several actions to make our Citizens Advisory Committee more representative of the communities that we serve. The first action was to create two additional at-large seats, and then the second action was to update the criteria that we use to recruit and fill vacancies. We at the staff level then got to work updating all of our materials to reflect that and soliciting applicants and reviewing applications on a rolling basis. And we were assisted in this work by Director Lauren, as well as our Citizens Advisory Committee Chair, Lisa Baker, who volunteered their time to assist with reviewing applications and screening applicants. And we're very grateful to them for their time. Tonight, we're excited to bring you the first nomination using that new process and criteria, the first person that's successfully gone through the process, and we're ready to ask for your appointment. And I understand that he may be here. I think he's here online and is going to be joining us. I asked him to say a few words. But by way of introduction, Frank Reyes is a resident of Woodland, a UC Davis graduate, father of two, a former Unitrans driver and member of the Unitrans Advisory Committee. He's a senior public health microbiologist at Contra Costa County, and he commutes 5 days a week from Woodland to Martinez through a combination of e-bike and Capital Corridor train, which is pretty amazing. And we think he'll make an outstanding CAC member. And tonight we're asking you to support his nomination to the committee. So if Frank is with us tomorrow, we'd love to have him say hello.
Frank, can you unmute yourself? Are you able?
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you. Chambers?
Okay. Yeah,
Great. Good evening, board members. Thank you for your consideration for appointing myself for that large position within the Citizens Advisory Committee. As a previous bus operator with Unitransit at UC Davis and current public transit user plus bicyclist commuter, I look forward to collaborating with my fellow committee members regarding the various transportation topics, both short and long term, that will impact Yolo County's residents and visitors. Special interest to myself are upcoming discussions regarding the Yolo County Active Transportation Corridors and Short Range Transit Plan and the positive impacts these topics will have on both active transportation commuters such as myself and young families navigating within the county. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Frank. And I will turn to any of my colleagues for any questions or comments.
I want to move approval of this appointment.
Well, okay, we're going to take public comment on it first, and then I'll come back to our motion. Is there any public comment for agenda item number 5?
Sorry to jump your hand.
Oh, you're all good.
Helen Hurst, someone who does multimodal commuting, we need to get on this CAC.
Yeah. Thank you, Alan. Is there any public comment online?
There's no public comment online.
Thank you, Norma.
My out of order.
And I would like to second that.
All right, so we have a motion by Director Stollard and second by Director Lauren. Any further discussion on appointing Mr. Reyes? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain? Motion carries 5-0. Congratulations, and thank you for taking the time to volunteer to give back to your community. We appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Agenda item number 6, actions pertaining to Yolo County Grand Jury Report on Homelessness in Yolo County. And once again, I will turn to our Executive Director, Autumn Bernstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. We do have a slide deck for this, so I'm going to go ahead and go to the next slide. So just to start with, our staff recommendation has 3 parts. So I just want to throw it up here at the beginning so you know what we're asking you to do. First is to receive the Yolo County Civil Grand Jury Investigative Report findings. Second is to authorize me to submit the required response to the grand jury. And the third is to direct staff to evaluate options for improving transportation to the East Beamer campus. Next slide. So the grand jury finding, this is a wide-ranging report. It has a lot of findings, most of which are not relevant to Yolo Transportation District, but there is one finding that is directed at us, which is that noting that the Fourth and Hope property is difficult for its intended clientele to access by bus. The closest bus stop is approximately 1.5 miles away, and the transportation vans at Fourth and Hope, which initially were donated to alleviate the transportation issues, run irregularly or not at all due to a variety of factors. Next slide. So the grand jury report also makes one recommendation, which is that the City of Woodland and the Yolo County Transportation District should renew efforts to establish bus service in the Northwest Industrial Area of Woodland. A request for a bus stop should be included in the next SACOG Unmet Transportation Needs Report submission. And you'll see I put those in direct quotes because those are the direct quotes from the report. Next slide. So we do have an obligation to respond. We're required to bring these findings to you, our board of directors, and to send a response to the grand jury within 90 days. And I'll just note that that 90-day deadline is coming up this week. So this is why this is before you today, and we do need to take some action today in response to the grand jury report. So a little bit of background, Fourth and Hope's East Beamer campus, here's a photo of it here. It provides an overnight shelter, permanent supportive housing units, a community center, a residential addiction treatment program. It currently houses 161 residents between the permanent supportive housing units and the overnight shelter. And the residential addiction treatment program is slated to open in October, and that will increase the number of residents to 221 at any given time. And that, of course, does not include staff and visitors as well. Next slide. The campus location, just to orient you, it's actually in the northeast corner of Woodland, near the intersection of County Road 102 and Beamer Way. It is 1.3 miles to our nearest bus stop, which is on Main Street. near the Walmart, for those of you who know the area, and the GameStop. And it is also outside our Beeline Microtransit service area. Next slide. So this just shows you a street view of what it currently looks like. It is, you know, in many ways, while it is now incorporated within the city limits, it retains the characteristics of a county road. There's no sidewalks. There's a very narrow shoulder. There's, you know, fast-moving traffic, and it's not a place that is accessible by a full-size 40-foot bus. Next slide. So just some thoughts. 4th and Hope does currently provide 3 round trips daily to the nearest yellow bus stop, and I just want to note that Doug Zeck, the executive director of 4th and Hope, is here in the room, and we appreciate him being here. And I'll put him on the spot that he can answer questions that I'm not able to answer about the facility and the service they currently provide. So they have a van program that provides 3 daily round trips to our yellow bus stop. We have received many requests for service to and from the East Beamer campus. We do not need approval from SACOG to provide transit service to 4th and Hope. That is a decision at the discretion of the YOLO TD Board of Directors. It was referenced in a grand jury report, but just to clarify what SACOG's role is, that if SACOG determines that there are unmet transit needs at 4th and Hope that are reasonable to meet, SACOG can then withhold local transportation fund dollars from YOLO County jurisdictions until those unmet transit needs have been fulfilled. To date, SACOG has found that there is not an unmet transit need that is reasonable to meet. Next slide. So our proposed response is to work with 4th and Hope and Woodland to evaluate improved transportation options to the campus, and we've identified so far that in my conversations with Mr. Zeck, as well as City Manager Ken Hyatt from the City of Woodland, we've identified 3 potential options that we'd like to explore further. The first is fixed route service using smaller minivans or buses that can navigate both the streets and the driveways there. So something similar to the van that they are currently operating, but on a more extended, more than 3 trips a day. Expand the Beeline service area to include Northeast Woodland, which would then, because of the location of 4th and Hope, it wouldn't just include 4th and Hope, it would include all of Northeast Woodland, that industrial area. So that would be a pretty significant expansion of the Beeline service area and would likely then precipitate the need for additional vehicles. And then the third option is to expand the privately operated van program that's currently in place. So our proposal is that we do that analysis in partnership between the 3 entities and bring that back to the YOLO TD board by April of 2025. So just to wrap up, to reiterate the recommendation, is to receive the report, authorize the executive director, me, to submit the response, and direct us to evaluate options. And we look forward to your comments, feedback, and any additional direction or clarifications or amendments you'd like to make to our motion. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Autumn. Do I have any clarifying questions for our staff team before we go to public comment?
Sure.
There's no question for Autumn. Are there any other similar residential sites outside of the City of Woodland that would be part of this planning effort of consideration of expanded service or taking that kind of action that are kind of outside of the service area but deserve a second mobile expanded service?
In terms of these specific types of uses, meaning kind of residential shelters or services, okay. Not to my knowledge, no.
Thank you. Any other questions for Autumn or her team before we go into public comment? Okay. So with that, we will open up public comment on agenda item number 6, and we'll turn to our folks that are here in person first. And we'll welcome our first public commenter. Well,
this is, again, a classic example of how transportation and transit is an afterthought, not built in, hard built into the program. This shelter should have never been located in the middle of nowhere. It's unjust. We have one of the case winners of another situation like that across the freeway, because that was the land was cheap, keep the people out of there. We have bus stops in Woodland at the shopping malls, and the bus stops are as far as possible from the stores. That's the way the shopping center was designed. In Sacramento, there is a light rail station that runs right by Loaves and Fishes, one of the biggest concentration of transit-defended people, but no one wanted to put a bus stop. Don't put a light rail stop there. This is a classic example. This agency should be proactive, should be involved with city planning,
So the transit is hard built into it, and we should not zone things that have people who are transit dependent off the main lines. That's critical. We shouldn't be paying to fix a problem that should be built into the land use planning. And that's what we're recovering from that now. We shouldn't let that happen anymore. No more transit apartheid, where the people who have stuck on buses they have poor transit or they're not accommodated. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan. Welcome.
Good evening. As mentioned, my name is Doug Zach. I'm the executive director with Forth and Hope. And we've seen a season over the last 4 years of a lot of expansion in our program, much needed expansion for those that have a lot of need, which I like to consider as our neighbors. I look forward to ongoing conversations with YTD and the City of Woodland in regards to providing the transportation need that's needed there or meeting the transportation need that's there. We are committed to continue to find a way to get our clients, those people that we serve, our neighbors, to where they need to be. We are a nonprofit. We're not an organization that is necessarily as any organization. We're not necessarily flush with the funds. So we're looking forward to having a very collaborative discussion about how we can help our neighbors move forward. We want to be solution-minded. I don't want to focus too much on how we got here. I just look forward to where we're headed. Because I know that there is a good solution out there. And so I agree with the recommendation of ongoing discussion around it, planning around it, and we do support that. And so I look forward to working with Autumn and her team and the board to find a better way to provide that transportation. So thank you.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
Bob?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Chapman, members of the board. Michael Barnbaum, I live in the city and county of Sacramento, and as I stated before, I do a lot of public transportation advocacy and consulting. Originally, I wasn't going to speak on this item, but there was something said from the first speaker, which I have to counter a little bit and just set the table and the facts straight. While there is not currently a light rail stop along the area of North 12th Street around Loaves and Fishes, Marisol Village, downtown Ford, and the area over in there in the River District, there is one in the making. Lynette Espinosa is the clerk to the board of the Sacramento Area Council of Governments and informed me that at a remote meeting in either Yuba or Sutter County earlier this year, the board approved funding, thanks in partnership to the Strategic Growth Council, for the Dos Rios Light Rail Station. It should be estimated to open in 2027, and it will be built and constructed in mind to accommodate brand new low-floor light rail vehicles, similar to how stations at Morrison Creek, Franklin, Center Parkway, and Cosumnes River College were built when they were built as part of the phase two in that section of Sacramento County for areas south of Meadowview Road. So just want to put that in, set the facts and the table straight on that. And that is a project, thank you, SACOG board members on this board that were a part of that at the remote meeting, and all of your colleagues on the board for approving that. And that will provide a lot of engineering, construction, and operational jobs around that area in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Since there's only three people in person here, I'm going to assume that we have no other in-person public comment. Do we have any public comment on this agenda item online?
We do not have any hands raised.
Okay, thank you, Omar. So we will close public comment, and I will turn to the dais to my colleagues for questions and discussion.
Just a question actually for Doug, if possible, just around the current situation or previous, the vans, the private sort of vans that were, utilized. I mean, I know That was, you know, I mean, never intended to be a long-term solution or anything like that, but just curious about, you know, sort of current status, right? How many vehicles do you have? How often do they operate? Just curious about that. And again, I completely understand that, you know, issues around cost and, you know, all the other things. So just appreciate any updates you can provide us.
Yeah. Sure. We currently have two vans. They operate Monday through Saturday, three times a day. So evenings and Sundays are not provided. Transportation is not provided by our team. The current source for funding that is utilizing existing homeless shelter funding for the staffing, and so that's how that's been funded to date. Did I answer all your questions?
That's great. Actually, I guess a follow-up, how well utilized are those vans, you know, during, you know, two vans, three times a day? You know, I'm curious about that.
Yeah, we'll have somewhere around 12 to 20 riders to and from. So it varies. In the morning, it's a little more heavily utilized. We will also provide transportation as one-offs as needed, or if available, I should say. And so that's the ridership currently. We have the new facility opening. And I should add this, that we are also making every attempt possible to bring services to the campus so that transportation needed to go to different services, social services and the like, medical services could potentially be provided on site, so then there wouldn't be that need for transportation. So we are actively working on that as well. And at complete build-out, we suspect that we'll have a lot of services on site. So.
Appreciate that clarification, too. That's really helpful. I think the other quick question I have, I guess, is around currently, where do the vans go? Do they just go wherever people need to go? Or is it a set route? Do they just have, you know, point-to-point, you know, from, East Beamer campus to, like, you know, Yolo HHSA? Or curious where they go.
For sure, every day, three times a day, they drive to the bus stop over at Walmart,
okay,
which is a mile and a half away.
Right.
And so if those that are accessing public transit that can get to that bus stop, that's where they want to go. And then, like I said, we do have some one-off transportation, maybe the HHSA or doctor appointments as needed. A majority, if not all, of the clients and residents that live out there have case managers assigned to them. Right. And so there are some case manager one-off transports that are done throughout the day as well.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. What's the treat?
Director Warren.
I have a question for you. And sure. Doug, we're glad that you're here. What is your mission?
The nonprofit mission?
As a 501c, yes.
Yeah, so our mission is to feed, clothe, and shelter, facilitate recovery for those in need by showing the love of Jesus Christ in words and actions, and that's our mission statement.
I didn't hear anything about transportation. I just appreciate your statement.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have a question, probably more comment than anything. So appreciate that this is going to go on, sounds like we're going to continue conversations, is what we're saying we're going to do. It would be helpful, can I take it maybe just one step further, and could we actually direct staff to come up with a plan? Appreciate us having conversations, and I don't know if that's kind of built into what we'd be conversating about would be their plan, but it makes me nervous for us that the action item to be conversations.
One of the recommendations is developing staff to evaluate options for improving. I mean, it's not necessarily explicitly develop a plan, but they've got to sort of go through the evaluate the different options first. But yeah. It sort of seems like it's heading in that direction. Yeah.
Yeah, Director Westside. I thought Director Stahl had a question.
No, he was helping me with the staff are going to evaluate options.
Yeah, say develop plan explicitly.
Could we add to that? Would staff be amenable, or my colleagues be able to, in addition to the options, actually just develop a plan that comes with those options?
I would.
Sure. Yeah.
No objections from staff.
Okay. Great. So I have a couple quick questions. I just want to make sure I'm clear on things. So in the report on, I think it's 129 and 130, it mentions two separate occasions on page 129. it cites the information from the SACOG staff report in February of 2022. And in that, it talks in the last part, it says in 2000, this is the YOLO study, YCD will be restructuring woodland fixed route bus routes in coordination with the launch of new intercity microtransit service in Woodland. When those service changes are planned, YCDV will work with service with the city of Woodland for the hope to determine whether any additional YCD support or services needed to adequately address, right? So I guess, so part of that is like, is that happening? Did that happen? Did we work with them if that's the case? And then I'm just going to dovetail that to 130 where it says quite the same, something like what YOLO needs, they want to work together to develop the plan. And it says, where'd it go? Sorry, I'm trying to find the last one I had. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll find it. You want to answer that first question for me? Sorry, I'm trying to find it in the step.
Yes, yeah, thanks. Absolutely. Yes, the SACOG, at the time when the SACOG did their analysis of the comments that they had received, that we'd received that we had passed on to them. They noted that there was, at that time, we had not yet finalized the beeline service area. And as part of finalizing the beeline service area, we were also looking at a potential restructuring of the 211 and the 212, our local bus routes. We decided at that time not to make any changes to the 211 and 212. And frankly, that wouldn't help this situation anyway, because again, we can't get 40-foot buses out there safely. And so even if we were to have restructured our fixed route buses, they would not have been able to serve East Beamer. So really that was not going to actually be a solution, if you will.
Okay. So I thought, sorry, it's in the third, it starts with, as noted in the grand jury report, SACOG made the determination that the privately operated van was sufficient to address the needs of Fourth and Hope in the near term, and that future YOLO TD planning efforts to restructure local bus routes in Woodland would also address the issue. Therefore, this was not an unmet transit need that was reasonable to me at that time. So yeah. How are we, because I'm on the SACOG board and I'm asked to vote on unmet transit needs, and it doesn't sound like maybe I'm wrong. What have we done in the past 2 years to address what they're, it doesn't seem like we've done much.
SACOG staff, when they write these, they don't ask us if we agree with what they put in their reports.
Right.
So there is a process by which, you know, we are part of a committee that SACOG puts together for each county that looks at each of the findings and makes comments about it, but it's ultimately SACOG staff that make the recommendation on whether or not they think that unmet transit need is reasonable to me. And so in this case, I mean, I didn't have anything to do with this language.
Did we maybe at least give them feedback? You said we at least have the option of making comments?
We absolutely have the option of making public comment. In this case, I don't believe that we did.
Right. I guess so. It says, I guess what I'm trying to hear is, it says in future YOLO TD planning efforts, right, to restructure local bus routes in Woodland, right, would also address this issue. So are we not, is that, we're talking about future planning right now. That's what we're talking about in this recommendation, like what are we going to do to address this.
Right.
So how do we square with what they're?
Yeah. So the future planning effort that they were referring to at that time, we determined at that time not to make any changes to our existing 211 and 212 bus service, so that happened. And again, even if we had restructured it and changed it, it wouldn't have been able to serve Fourth and Hope due to the lack of infrastructure.
But then the other, so now my last question, but then the other piece is that we're not currently using microtransit to get out there.
That's
so
right.
YOLO YTD is currently not providing any service to Fourth and Hope.
That's right. So that would have been the other option, was we could have expanded our beeline. When we adopted the beeline service area, it could have included that entire northeast sector of Woodland, in which case that would have also served.
Okay. And is that basically the only, if YOLO TD was in this, providing a service, that would really be the only type of service they could do, right? Because we can't take the larger buses out there. It would be either paying for another van or drivers or expanding beeline to that area. Is that right?
That's right. It would either be expanding beeline to that area or doing a separate fixed route service that is with smaller
vehicles. With smaller vehicles. Right.
Yes.
And those are things that you're going to look at in option number 3.
That's right.
Those are all options that you'll come back.
That's
okay.
Right.
Thank you. Yeah. Director Sullivan.
I'm presuming we can't use paratransit for special runs out there.
So paratransit follows wherever microtransit or fixed route transit goes. And it's actually, so if we were to provide either fixed route or microtransit out there, we would also have to provide complimentary paratransit. And paratransit is the most expensive service we run, so we probably wouldn't want to run that as a standalone service.
Just to defend the operation here, I don't think anybody has ignored this problem. And I know my hope initially was that the two vans would cover the need. But, you know, the population is growing out there with the permanent housing for 61 people and the expansion with 50-bed program to help people with alcoholism and drug abuse and the like. So it's growing, and all that's good. And so I would say I want to give the staff a look at the freedom to look widely at this and consider how best to meet it. You know, obviously, we now know fixed road route is not an answer because the roads is terrible for that. It won't work. So that's why I think we ought to investigate our ability to use paratransit as well as potential beeline runs, perhaps on some kind of schedule. But I don't know what would be the impact. I mean, when we started beeline, we said this started it. It's not the end of it. And I mean, we all look forward to having a need for more vans, and it's nice to see the numbers are showing more public acceptance of it, and possibly at some point. And I had mixed emotions about excluding the Northeast area at that front end, because that's where a lot of our jobs are in this town, in the city, is in that Northeast area. So I just feel less inclined to direct staff other than to say, look at this. Consider what you, and then give us your best shot, maybe with a couple other options, and we'll have that conversation. You were talking about April, bringing it back. April?
Yes.
Okay, that's out there.
Yes.
Is that okay?
Yeah, I mean, I would refer to staff for the timelines that they need in order to come back with all the appropriate information for us to make a decision.
So would that be, I want to make sure I'm clear, because April is a little ways out. When they would be coming back, it would be with the information we would need in order to actually make a decision, or would that be then more conversations? Because I'm just concerned about the actual need in the meantime.
I think it's a great question. You know, what we've identified is just kind of that we would look at several options and look at the cost, and also work with Fourth and Hope to really better understand what the need is, maybe by surveying their residents.
Okay.
So look at cost, look at block ridership, look at, does it get people where they need to go? Where are they trying to go? Where do they need to get to? But in terms of if the board wants to direct us to actually then have a specific recommended alternative at that conversation in April, I think that's certainly something staff is amenable to. You tell us what process works for you.
Mark Song? I think we need to remember, in this real world, economics plays major role in what we do and what we don't do. And we just heard about a 3,000 house subdivision, you know. The need out of that, it's not in our service territory, is obviously a very significant thing. And we have to make our choices. Now, this is a transit needy population. Some of them have cars, and I know a lot of them have bicycles, right? So they're not without transportation options. And walking a mile and a half isn't the end of the world either, but it's not exactly a pleasant walk.
Given. I'm 110 degrees.
Well, I'm not saying it's pleasant.
Yes.
But that's why I feel like my feeling is I don't want to zero in on any particular solution at this time or even soon. I think we need to consider all these things. We need to really understand the demand, and then if we can develop a program that's financially feasible to go for. That's what we do here. Thank you.
I support the staff recommendation and adding maybe having some options to this. I would just like to remind everyone that, you know, when we discussed this in the past, we got about a packet of letters supporting that we are involved because we are a transportation agency. And I heard from Doug his mission tonight, and it doesn't say that they're a transportation agency. So I'd just like to remind people of our role and part of our core values. We are transparent, inclusive, and accountable to the public, stakeholders, and partner agencies. And so, I feel strongly about not just talking about this, but having an action. And I would like to just go back to a comment made earlier by Alan about Winters. The city of Winters, city limit line is on the east side of town, west of 505. El Rio Villa
is in the county, and it's never been part of the city of Winters, although it's part of our school district and our services, and it is divided by the 505, and is very hard on that community to get around and to come to Winters. But Winters didn't plan that. It predates.
The supervisor from Winters probably has a say.
Yeah, we.
In the 1950s.
In the 1950s, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't go back that far.
Okay. Any other colleagues have any other questions or comments?
I just want to be clear about what we're
actually.
Yeah,
same thing.
Okay.
You gotta go for it. Don't tell you.
Don't all talk at once. So the recommendation, the staff recommendation, I would just set up for me a minute. No, because no one's actually put it forward yet. Okay. So I would ask to adopt the staff recommendation with the amendment of staff bringing forth a plan or several plans, not just options, and with a recommendation in April.
And then, I think I heard you say, I think it'd be important, obviously, in that time would be, the cost implications of each of those plans, right? And I think another piece would be, how is that funded, right? Not just the total, but where those funds come from. And then I think maybe not to go through that here, right? I heard Director Stollard and you, Executive Director Bernstein, talking about the outreach with Doug and his team out there to get kind of more in-depth information on the services that are needed there from the residents that are there. If that varies from, time of year, if it's more of an impact in you're seeing folks using the vans a lot more in summer and winter with heat and with rain, whatever that is, like just, I think a thorough analysis of what those needs are from the residents that live there would also be great to come back to us, whether it's April or before that, I don't know, but whatever we're able to do there. Sound good? All right.
Thanks for me.
Okay. So we have a motion from Director Early to direct staff to evaluate options and plans for improving transportation at East Beaver campus and including that as staff recommendation for one of those options. Does that sound about right?
Yes.
Okay.
I'd like to second the motion.
Okay. So we have a motion by Director Early, a second by Director Warren. Any further comments or questions from my colleagues?
Okay.
Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Motion carries 5-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Agenda item number 7. We're going to receive progress report on the Beeline service, and we will turn to Daisy Romero. Welcome.
Good evening, members of the board and members of the public. We're going to talk about Beeline.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So in the table contents, we're just going to go over some of the key elements for Beeline that we see here. Next slide, please. All right. Ridership trends. So overall, ridership's increasing, specifically in Woodland. We've definitely been breaking some records in June and July. There was, kind of a little bit of a dip in June, but that's, seasonal. Those are part of the seasonal trends that we see during that. But next slide. So this is just a graph, and it's just showing the comparison between ridership and for Beeline for Woodland Zone, Knights Landing, and Winters. And so, like as we mentioned, Woodland just keeps breaking records. There's the color highlighted in blue. Next slide. And then this is just comparing Knights Landing and Winters, just so you guys can get a better view of what the ridership actually looks like separate from Woodland. So like I mentioned, June, there was a slight dip, usually seasonal trends. We have a lot of students that use the service, but it picked back up again in July. Slide, please.
It's not that real.
So the top Beeline destinations, no surprise to us. So a lot of the top pickup and drop-off locations are already existing bus stops. So in Woodland, we have Counterpart Mall, Woodland Community College, and, of course, the Costco Shopping Center. Kind of same thing with Winters. Our biggest users are El Rio Villa, which is good news for the city of Winters. So, we just got done talking about that population being impacted. So, thankfully, they are able to use the service. And then, of course, Lorenzo's Market, And then the Safeway in Davis. And same thing with Knights Landing. So usually like the top grocery stores and then Woodland Community College, as well as the area near the Yolo County Superior Court here in Woodland. So relationships between MicroTransit and Fixed Route. I know this was a concern that kind of came up when Beeline was being introduced and how it might impact Fixed Route service. Overall, what we've seen so far, it's actually, Beeline's helping us attract new transit riders instead of replacing, those existing Fixed Route riders that we have on the Fixed Route. So, and then... so restoration, so back in January, we restored some trips for Woodland, and that was the early AM trips and the later evening trips, and what we saw was, pretty big jump in ridership from Fixed Route once we restored those trips in Woodland. And then again, as I mentioned, like in Woodland, we keep seeing some pretty records being broken for microtransit, both June and July. Took a look at August, and again, we broke records again. For Beeline riders in Woodland.
Great. Before you just, thank you so much. I just had a clarifying question. Your local bus ridership, it says it's 30% higher than Beeline ridership September 2023 to July 2024. I just have a question regarding, appreciate that the comparison is ridership, your bus ridership to Beeline. I just want to make sure I'm keeping up. Is the 25% increase in bus ridership also part of that? So I think one of the point that you made was, hey, we're concerned that potentially bus ridership might decrease due to the Beeline. And the 30% is compared to the Beeline ridership. I'm just curious about what the comparison is September 2023 through July 2024. Like bus to bus.
I see what you're saying.
Because the point you're making is ideally it hasn't decreased.
So if you go back to figure 6, Norma, which is the next slide, 23.
Yeah.
You see September of 2023 that you can then compare back to July. So you see the first two bars, the dark blue bar is the 211, the orange bar is the 212. And what you can see there is you're looking at about 4,500 riders there. Now, we haven't gone all the way through, right, because we do have seasonal trends. But what you can see is the combined ridership of the 211 and 212, it dropped initially, right? And then we've seen it rebound and kind of stabilized in the spring, and then we saw the summer drop off. So I think, is it the same as it was before? I don't think we have that particular number, but you can sort of start to see that trend illustrated here. Especially when you consider that in September, Beeline started at September 18th of 2024. So that's really showing you a full month of Fixed Route ridership in September 23, but only a partial month of Beeline.
Okay. Kind of. No, really, honestly, kind of. I think the one thing I would say is I would typically want to compare apples to apples and look at the same time period the previous year to actually answer the question whether the Beeline has impacted Fixed Routes.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, although I love the rebound, it still hasn't quite rebound to what it was in September.
Mm-hmm.
Those would just be the two things. That doesn't mean that this isn't a good thing. I'm just saying to answer the question regarding whether it's been impacted. It looks like it likely has.
Yeah, I mean, we are kind of seeing a little bit of a dip. Usually, for most of our Fixed Route ridership, we do see a huge dip around this time because the majority of our users are students, and not just K-12 students, but also university students. We kind of see similar issues with the Route 42, which is our inner-city route. But I guess, the tell of time will be probably August, September, whether or not this rebounds. And then I think that will actually be our one full year of both Beeline and MicroTransit.
And the only thing I would say is, because I think clarity is important, is that it's not just having the 1 year, but in order to actually be able to answer that question, I would go back to the previous year and look at what Fixed Route looked like. Mm-hmm. And again, that doesn't mean that maybe our outcome of success in regards to the fixed line hasn't changed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's actually not the right metric, by the way, I would say. But if we're trying to answer that question, I wouldn't simply compare it to this year versus next year. It would be comparing to when you had no beeline,
okay,
what the fixed route was.
Gotcha.
This is very helpful, David. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I think we were skip ahead a couple of them. I did not. All right. So this is the heat map that we designed for Woodland Service. So essentially what we're looking at, I know it's kind of hard to tell, hopefully you guys can see a little bit better in your packets. So one of the things to point out, the bright yellow spots is the higher use locations for the Woodland Beeline Service. So again, no surprise, kind of we mentioned earlier, the County Fair Mall, Woodland Community College, and of course the kind of Gateway Shopping Center, which is where the Costco and Target is located, is probably our biggest users. But one of the things that I wanted to point out was also that the blue line and the orange line are both our 211 and 212 routes. And so these are kind of showing where all of our beeline riders are getting picked up and dropped off. So you can kind of tell that a lot of them are pretty much getting picked up and dropped off along the route 211 and 212. Okay.
It shows that we've selected well.
Yeah, we have a lot of bus stops. So that was one of the things that we wanted to make sure that when we were transitioning or when our users, it was just a very seamless process so that a lot of our riders are already familiar with our bus stops. So we just wanted to make it a lot easier. And going back to Mr. Alan Hirsch's point, a lot of our bus stops also have shelters and amenities. So it was just kind of a way for us to go.
Mm-hmm.
And if I may, just to point back to our prior conversation, and I know Doug isn't here, but if you look at that heat map, you'll see that East Main Street, where the Walmart is one of our heavily utilized beeline stops. And I think that anecdotally, that evidence suggests, and I think we also know this, that this is where we have folks from the East Beamer campus are being dropped off and they're requesting beeline.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is a factor in why we
have for years, location. People have parked in that shopping center all day. They pull in the morning, they get on the 42 and go to Sacramento, and they come back in their cars. Then. So that could be another part of that.
I think you're thinking of the other shopping center.
Pardon me?
Director Sarah, I think you're thinking of the other shopping center because that Walmart, the 42, doesn't go anywhere.
You're exactly right. But forgetting what we call that one.
That one's the
grocery outlet.
Grocery outlet, yeah. I think it was called. But
yeah.
Herbert's right.
You're right.
Right. Did you have a question, Director?
Just drinking that
one. Okay. One of the things we can also look at, too, with that heat map are the hotels. So where those two hotels are located kind of like right behind that Gator Shopping Center, that's also one of our heavily used locations, too, for beeline. Next slide, please. Customer satisfaction. So one of the things when we kickstarted beeline was going to make sure we were at least maintaining a 4.5 out of 5 rating. And we, up until now, or at least in July, we maintain that. We actually have 4.6 and then across the board for Woodland, 4.6 and then 4.4 for Winters and then 4.7 for Night Flatting. So overall, we've been getting some pretty good feedback from our beeline riders. You know, it's just good news is what we've been hearing so far.
Have a question?
Sure. Dr. Warren.
Is there any... do we provide feedback from, you know, do Winners residents say any reason why they is there a comment?
Yes, you know, there is they can like either rate by the stars or they can actually provide comments. And I would say probably Winters is one of the group that comments the most.
Yeah.
But that's fine with me. I like a vocal population. Yeah, so like I don't have the comments in front of me, but yeah, for the most part, they're usually, and I know our CAC board director, Lisa Baker, also says, and gives us a lot of really good feedback.
Okay.
And if we ever run into any challenges, we definitely hear about them.
So do I.
This transit district is a Yolo County transit district. That's our normal boundary. when we go out of our service area for downtown Sacramento and the airport, and we go out of our service area at the back of it. What I would ask is, there is a Solano Transit Agency, Transportation Agency, does it bring people into Yolo County at all? Because those Dixon people need service, but it's, I don't see that as our responsibility.
So Solano County actually has multiple transit agencies, multiple small transit agencies. The individual cities have individual transit agencies, and then there's one kind of semi-countywide one, Soul Transit, based in Vallejo. They operate a service, it's their Blue Line, that does, it previously went to UC Davis and downtown Sacramento, and then connected all the way down actually to the Walnut Creek BART station. They no longer go to downtown Sacramento. They do continue to stop at UC Davis, and I think they make 3 trips a day.
Mm-hmm. Just wondering. Thank you.
Sure.
We can't solve everybody's problem.
Sure. Is it on this part here? Okay. Director Warren.
Yeah, I just wanted to add the comment that Winners is part of the Solano Community College District, and so we take the kids there.
All right. We'll turn back to Daisy.
So with all the positive feedback that we get, we are still facing some challenges. As Spider-Man's grandpa once said, with great power comes great responsibility. So,
I like what you did there.
But rest assured, you know, staff is working, you know, very hard and very closely with our transit team, as well as our RIDECO team, which is the software provider for Beeline. And just kind of addressing all of the issues that we've been experiencing in the can range anywhere from like high demand in specific service zones, which causes sometimes our riders to be late, and technology challenges for our riders and our drivers as well, because it's very new to them too. And then just the overall understanding of what the Beeline service actually is. There's been some confusion recently between what the difference between paratransit and Beeline as well. I know for a lot of our paratransit riders, it's Beeline is more convenient for them, those that are a little bit more able-bodied, but then we run into some challenges where we get some folks that think that they can somehow get the benefits of paratransit with Beeline, and just the way of this, how the service works is not the same. So,
paratransit, door-to-door.
Yes, yeah, door-to-door, there's a little bit more assistance from our drivers versus Beeline, it's curb-to-curb, and you pretty much are able to get on and off, you know, by yourself. But we do get some paratransit riders. If they have like a medical appointment that day, it's easier for them to book Beeline. And with paratransit, you need at least 24 hours in advance to do a trip. So just some of the challenges that we've been facing and that we're still working through with both TransDev and RIDECO, as well as our team internally. Next slide. I know when we brought this to the board in February, there was some discussions about how this was impacting Winters. I believe Winters is where we were seeing kind of like the highest impacts as far as routes or trips being late, riders being impacted by those late trips. And so we've been kind of doing an analysis similar to the heat map. So kind of what we looked at was two things. What we realized was, one, there is insufficient vehicles for the amount of people booking trips. So basically everyone's booking a trip at the same time and that vehicle can only be at one place at one time. And so originally we thought it was because they were traveling from Vacaville into Winters and then Winters into Davis. But actually what we found was there isn't a lot of ridership in Vacaville. It's mostly between Winters and Davis. So typically people are trying to get back from Davis into Winters and then the folks from Winters either trying to get home or get back to Davis. They're all booking trips at the same time. And so sometimes, like, they're basically competing with each other. And with, like I said, with one vehicle, it becomes increasingly challenged to meet everyone's needs. And so that's where we hear the complaints. It's like, hey, we got left behind, or hey, my trip was late. Those are some of the things that we've been noticing with Winters. Next slide, please.
You know, I'm sorry. Well, yeah, what's the...
Sorry, go back one.
The second piece. Book software?
So,
probably depends on Wi-Fi or something like that.
It's interesting sometimes, like when it goes into certain locations, the Wi-Fi will get like really spotty or it'll go out or the tablets will kind of like drop it. And then with one vehicle, with that one system, so if that system goes down, then it basically kind of just shuts off. There's no backup at that moment. So what we've been doing recently is taking kind of like a backup tablet in case we run into those issues. That way those rides are not impacted when the technology does go down.
How reliable is the software?
It's not the software itself. It's just the area that they're in. Because of the rule, like I know Knights Landing has sometimes like Wi-Fi issues.
Mm-hmm.
How would a second tablet though fix that? I mean, wouldn't it too have Wi-Fi issues?
I mean, depending on what it is, sometimes it is like the Wi-Fi, sometimes like if the battery like dies, then we'll bring the other tablet. But I mean, if it is a Wi-Fi issue, then we usually go back to basically phone and paper at that point. The other thing too is that typically the software. What we've seen in most microtransit services, it's typically, for example, like Woodland. It's usually like pretty close, we're not traveling long distances. We're in a very unique situation where we have to travel pretty far distance. And then the way the service is designed right now, if a rider has to book a trip from Vacaville to Davis, they basically have to go from Vacaville to Winters, book another trip from Winters, and then to Davis. So that one vehicle is traveling pretty far distances. And so sometimes, like, again, it kind of goes back to the previous point where it just can't keep up with the amount of service that we're getting.
You said a fixed route busted that exact route.
We did, and that's what one of our CAC members recommended. But yeah, that's
right.
Some of the issues that we
Can I ask two questions on this and then we can continue? So, I'm curious to know whether tonight or in future, like you talked about insufficient vehicle and people bidding against each other basically in Winters under the two main issues under number one. Like, how is that being resolved? Is it
I think that's two more slides.
Oh, great.
Two more slides.
Great.
You forgot what you approved already, Angel. Josh.
That's for Dan's. Are there other types of technology that. Are there other types of technology that we can use, hotspots or things like that, so people aren't using pens and paper if the Wi-Fi goes down that they're connected to them? And what is there not a better alternative for us to use so that disruption isn't as severe when that happens?
I believe we can. I know like our fixed route buses are configured with Wi-Fi on them, so it's maybe something that we can consider possibly installing in our microtransit vehicles.
I was just curious as to what the problem. Yeah, no, go for it.
No, you're exactly right. I guess my only source of confusion, and I'm just throwing it out there, is if it's just a general like broadband issue. No matter how much Wi-Fi you put in the vehicle, there's nothing. At least my understanding of how broadband would work, right? There's nothing to connect to. If it's the carrier potentially that we're using for the iPads, right? If that particular carrier doesn't really like make it out there for whatever reason, the towers or mm-hmm. whatnot. And so maybe that would be one of the things you'd want to look into.
Yeah.
Our solutions. I don't know. Jesse, I'm not familiar with the broadband out there. I know you still talk about it a lot though.
Yeah.
It's just, that stretch on 128 between Davis and Winters. It's hard to have any phone calls without them dropping, or internet. Yeah, and even in the city of Winters and even at my house. There's just not dependable broadband. And there's some places where Verizon works, some places where AT&T works. It is not a dependable broadband in that region.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
We'll go look there on this time.
We're working on it. Please, Mom. We're working on it. So we brought this to the CAC, I believe, in July. And so some of the feedback they gave us was, service is great to hear about it. And then kind of directed first, so saying, like, potentially looking at restoring the 220, which was an old fixed route service that used to operate in Winters, both in Vacaville, Winters, and Davis as well. But I believe it had a couple trips in the morning and then a couple trips in the evening, and we also had a commuter which is the 220C. And then we brought up the fact that there isn't a lot of ridership or demand in Vacaville, which was, like, surprising to us, especially since we stopped at the Walmart near the outlets, as well as the Kaiser Hospital, as well as the satellite campus that's associated with Solana Community College. But the ridership just isn't there. And so one of the recommendations we got from our CDC board members was to do a little bit more outreach with them because it's possible that they just may not know we even exist in that area. Next slide, please. And I believe this will answer Director Chapman's question earlier. So what are some of the things that we're looking at to address these issues as far as like everybody trying to book the trips at the same time? So if you guys recall, back in July, you guys voted in our budget to allow for future expansion of the B-line in both nights landing and in winters, and that included expanding the hours of service between 7 in the morning to, I believe, ran pretty late, and then adding an additional vehicle to each service. So right now we have that one vehicle operating all of nights landing as well as the town of Yellow. And then we also have that one vehicle operating in the winter zone. And so part of what we included in the future expansion of the budget was to add additional vehicles in winters and in nights landing and then extend the hours so that we were able to accommodate some of the issues that we were running into. And that's my presentation.
Thank you. Thank you, Daisy. I know we've been asking for that update, and it's got bombed because you did a great job with that information there. So thank you for putting that together and being here with us this evening. Any clarifying questions for Daisy or our staff team before we open public comment?
Public comments.
All right, we will open public comment, and we'll welcome our first public commenter.
Thank you, Michael Barnbaum, City and County of Sacramento, and Public Transportation Advocacy and Consulting. Daisy, thank you for a great presentation on this, and just it gives me a little bit better sense of an overall service picture and some of the challenges I see from the presentation, the looking ahead that the district is going to face. I've heard the term, and I've dealt with these a lot, the short-range transit plan. And I'm glad the Citizens Advisory Committee weighed in on this in July. There's a lot to, you know, give and take based on the conversation in the one-on-one back in August. Not enough vehicles. You know, I think it kind of goes to weigh in, okay, what do you do after the service restorations occur that are programmed in the approved budget and are focused in West Sacramento. Okay, but you have a lack of vehicles. But still looking ahead, do you add the 16 trips that is on the wish list for the 42 A and B to truly fine-tune the schedule and make that every 30 minutes, start a service to end a service every day? Do you reintroduce a route, it, as is said in this presentation, between the Davis Winters and Vacaville? How do you fine-tune reintroducing that service so it's not as much of a schedule or a copycat of a route alignment as it was pre-COVID? And then the challenges here in Woodland as well. So I see there's a lot to weigh in, and maybe this will help for the executive director. I think kind of going on a short-range transit plan workshop might be one of the great things going forward. I know on Wednesday I'm using the Capital Corridor service. Thank you, Director Stollard, for mentioning that service, and Director Ferrix as well. There is a comprehensive operational exercise for AC Transit that I'm going to be attending at their headquarters on Franklin Boulevard in Oakland. So I want to see what that's going to be like, because I hear that there's going to be a big one coming to Sacramento after they award a consultant in the fall and kick off their COA in 2025.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. We had a robust discussion in July, I think it was August, or July, about the budgeting and having quality numbers, not just how much it costs, but what are we getting out of it? And we should install some quality numbers, quality metrics about what we're getting out of the V-Line service. I heard tonight concerns about buses being sold out. We should have metrics on that. Bunch of metrics on on-time performance. We have some issues with that. We should metrics put some metrics on that so we can track our performance on improving that. I heard some questions about the broadband going down. We should track that. Maybe we should put antennas on top of the train. We should track that because if you don't measure it, you're not going to manage by it. And also, I'm concerned about on these charts. These bar charts are almost unreadable, especially if you print them in black and white. You should have 12 months running averages. That takes out the seasonality. We can do better. The chart should not be solid lines. They should be barred. They should print out so you can black and white so you actually can read them. These are just really nice. And then maybe you have color prints, but I don't. It's not really fair to have this sort of stuff. We can do better on presenting the data and more crisply. And I'm concerned about the cost again, the cost effectiveness. I don't see no cost numbers in here. The cost of this thing is really expensive. $8, $10, $12, $15 a mile. We should be tracking this thing very effectively because this is 5 and 10 times what a fixed route bus service costs per mile. And I also want to share an article that was in the Davis Enterprise, which is reflective of the ITS, the UCSIC, that talks about the impact of ride-hailing services, which the microtransit is, that basically it actually replaces more sustainable modes. So when you get someone on a microtransit or on a lift or hail, it basically takes people off active modes. So it basically doesn't reduce VMT. It actually increases VMT, vehicle miles traveled. Remember, we're counting on increasing and funding of microtransit to mitigate 11% of the miles in the mitigation plan for I-80. Now, you might pass legal muster, but it doesn't pass moral muster because we're counting on this to reduce VMT for the I-80. So I'll pass out this article. This is from the Davis Enterprise, and that also begins the UC Davis study too. This is important. This is our future, and we need to reduce VMT. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Alan.
Should have stayed long enough for the music.
Do we have any more in-person?
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Public comment. Okay. Do we have any online public comment for this agenda item?
We do not have any hands raised online.
Okay. Thank you. So with that, we will close public comment, and I will turn it back to the dais for questions and dialogue from my colleagues.
Oh, they did? Yeah. I have a couple of questions.
Director Early.
So I do think just looking at your next steps when it comes to hopefully I'm following. Yep, I am. Okay, good. Develop a specific service chain proposal based on data and public writer input. I do have a couple of questions. So I'm lucky to have my colleague next to me, Director Barracks, around the 220 because that was before my time on here. Because I did ask the question, like, okay, well, why did this happen? It was because of COVID. I get that. And now we will not say post-COVID, but it's a different world now. And so is there a world where potentially we could bring back Route 220? Also, my colleague was helping to educate me past institutional knowledge on that maybe it was not necessarily the Vacaville route that got the most, but it was the Davis and Winters that really got it. So I'd be curious about just as you are developing specific service change and proposals, if we could build that into the proposal of like what would the cost be to actually bring back the fixed route, which I've also heard my colleague Director Lauren actually say several times about the fixed route 220 and what that was. And so,
yeah. So works. If I may jump in. Yeah, those are great questions. Where we are currently doing a short range transit plan, and one of the research questions for that SRTP is looking at fixed route versus microtransit broadly across our service area. Where is microtransit working? Where is it not working? Particularly in places like Winters, where we have fixed route ridership numbers from before we replaced it with microtransit, and to assess that. So we are hesitant to sort of pre
predetermine the outcome of that process by saying, let's go ahead and bring that back now, because that is part of what we're looking at. We may find that there's other places where that makes sense as well. Woodland, you know, case in point, we decided to not make any changes to our Woodland fixed route transit service, right? That came up earlier, in part because we wanted to have both services happen simultaneously, which we've now had for 11 months, both with D-Line and fixed route. And then again, use that data to inform our SRTP and make decisions about whether or not it does make sense to discontinue some of our local transit service, continue it, expand it, et cetera. So that is part of that overall effort that's been scoped in SRTP. So for this year, what we asked for you to do in the budget was to add that second vehicle for B-Line as a kind of a short-term measure, if you will, that would allow us to address what we know are the gaps that we have right now while we are moving forward with our short-range transit plan.
I guess the only thing that makes me, so I understand that, and that was actually part of my question, is that we built into the budget that we would add the second vehicle to try to, I guess, bridge the potential gap. What I would hope and what I want to see, because I get concerned about relying on a short-range plan and hoping that we would have concrete recommendations in the near future about whether B-Line really is the most cost-effective approach or direction for this, or if we should go back, particularly because we know that we are going to have some budget issues in the near future.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other colleagues have questions? I asked for staff.
I'm sorry. I have one more question. I had the question about the Solana Community College, maybe an untapped market for Winters B-Line. I might have missed you going a little bit deeper because I didn't know what that meant.
I think what that was talking about was really that we didn't really have a lot of ridership at that satellite campus, which is right across the street from the Kaiser Backlow, just to kind of give you an idea where it's at. So it's actually one of the stops that we serve for the Winters zone in Vacaville. But no one's really using it. And so that's what I think that comment was saying. And it came from our CAC board member where they're like, you might want to go talk to them because it's possible that they may not even know we exist.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much, first of all, for the updates. I know it's something we've been talking about for a while. Also, just want to thank all of you as staff for just this service. I think it's a really great sort of enhancement of a way to be responsive that ways that we haven't been able to do before. So it's definitely clear from the ridership numbers that especially, you know, certain it's working, but it's also in the sure issues of cost and all these other issues, but people are using it. So really appreciate all the work that's gone into it, first of all. A couple quick things. One, I do think that, yeah, we clearly is an ability to have a increase in, potentially increase. I think the recommendation was Solana Community College may be an untapped market for Winters B-Line. Yes, there are currently zero riders. So, yes, I would say that constitutes an untapped market. Yes, there's definitely we can go up from there. So that's good. So a couple of things. I do think that the obviously excited to see that the sort of the Winters service is doing well. I know that the one vehicle, that's been a challenge, obviously. There's been a bunch of talk tonight about how, the mistakes of the past in terms of El Rio Villa and its location, but it's the number one origin spot and it's the number one destination spot for this microtransit service. So, and at least as it relates to the city of Winters. So clearly there is a need being served and filled there. And so again, really grateful for that. I think that I'm not entirely surprised to see that we heard anecdotally, but that a lot of the ridership is sort of back and forth, sort of between Winters and Davis. And I do have a couple of questions about it, though. So, and the reason is because on one of the charts, and the sort of winter stop location, it's got, of course, again, El Rio Villa, number one origin, number one destination. But it talks about some of the sort of location, both origin and destination. Yeah, like further deeper into the into the staff report, just talks about the majority of trips in Winters service owner between Davis and Winters. They almost exactly correspond with the former route of the Fix 220. I mean, including, you know, what was University Mall that's being redone. You know, the UC Davis campus, the University Mall, the sort of Marketplace Shopping Center, Sutter Davis Hospital, those are all were on the same route 220. And then, of course, it used to go over to Winters and do a loop around Winters, excuse me. And so I think we should be having a conversation, obviously, about sort of making that adjustment. I mean, potentially in the future around to the 220. We know it's less expensive than having to the issue of like ride hailing services or whatever, replacing more sustainable options. You know, I think that fixed route service is clearly there's an interest in the sort of that route. I mean, whether or not they would use it is a different thing. But so that's an issue. I also think that we should probably consider not having back at all. I mean, at least, you know, I mean, it's a lot of miles. I mean, it's a lot of miles for not, I mean, there's some usage, no question, but it may make more sense to have a stronger fixed route service that's literally just back and forth or have the strong, you know, a fixed route service that's back and forth between Davis and Winters, but still, again, help to afford, you know, the two vehicles of the microtransit by not having a, you know, extension from Winters to Vacaville with a fixed route service, right? I mean, just sort of there's some trade-offs there cost-wise and stuff. So, and I leave that to you all to figure out, obviously, but I think that might be a possibility is when we sort of, when it's all said and done, sort of just for us to take a look at. Another quick question that I have just is around that I know the ridership or the V line has only started on July 1st for the town of Yolo. I get that. And I know that the town of Yolo riders were embedded within the next landing. I'm just curious, how's it going, right? It's only since July 1st. Curious, how's it going? Are people using it yet? It was something that we obviously had a lot of discussion around, but also had some interest from Supervisor Barajas in particular, mm-hmm. and no other, and I know it's a part of the cabinet has not been serviced for a number of years, so curious about that. Thank you.
I know when we looked at it for the month of July, we didn't have any usage in the town of Yolo, so August numbers just came out. So okay. What we're going to probably do is take that information and probably take basically plot it and see, because right now how we get it is kind of like the lawns and lats and just
yeah.
The computer. But yeah, we can definitely do that.
Great, thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah, and I mean, you know, I think as with anything that's new, and first of all, town of Yolo is awesome. It's very, very small. So there's not going to be thousands of riders, you know, obviously it's a small town. But also at the same time, like, I just appreciate if there's also anything we can do on the county side to, like, whether it's the Yolo County Library, other avenues that, you know, there's staff community hub there and then mm-hmm. town of Yolo for sure to help make sure that you get the word out. Yeah. I know we've all have participated in a variety of events up there already. So just, you know, we're happy to make sure that we are keeping or getting the work going. I think it will take a little time to get folks sort of in engaged. I appreciate all that. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Director Lauren.
Yeah, first I want to thank staff for all their hard work on this and also thank my fellow board members for their really good questions and focus, especially when it pertains to Winters. I wanted to just kind of bring us back to that question of, like, what are we trying to solve? And I think that we're trying to solve late pickups, missed trips due to high demand in Winters. And that's why we want to bring that extra microbus, the extra V-line to Winters. But there are commuters that aren't served that used to commute early in the morning and then come back. And that was the 220. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a different, that those are different riders that are being served by V-line. And I think we need to, a lot of people that work with the university, there's quite a few that live in Winters. So that I think we need to consider that on if the 220 comes back that we serve Davis. And if the numbers don't support going to Solano, then let's not go to Solano. I mean, if we're providing a service that nobody's using, then those are empty buses that don't need to be on the street. I just think we need to make considerate decisions. Thank you.
Hey, Director. Any other questions or comments?
I'd love to just offer a couple of comments based on these. This is great. This is a great conversation. And just a few thoughts. Solano County, there is currently no transit service between Winters and Vacaville that Solano County does provide, but that doesn't mean that they wouldn't necessarily be interested in it. And it might be worth having a conversation with Solana Transportation Authority to explore if there is an interest in some kind of jointly operated or shared service to serve that corridor. You know, the majority of those miles are in Solano County, not Yolo County. So anyway, I think it's an interesting idea to look at kind of decoupling that and having a conversation with our partners in Solano County. So I want to echo that. In terms of replacing Beeline with fixed route, I think there are some compelling reasons that a fixed route service could work better. But I also just there are people who are currently using Beeline who that service would not serve, right? And so it's important to be very thoughtful about that. There's always winners and losers in any decision like that, and I think we would just want to carefully weigh the trade-offs. So if I sound a bit hesitant, it's because I think that this might be a yes and situation, not an either or. And if there are those trade-offs, and we have to create winners and losers, let's be thoughtful about it. Also, when it comes to the short-range transit plan, one of the reasons that the past short-range transit plan, which I was not a part of, but which I inherited and have been struggling to implement ever since it was adopted due to our driver shortages and other things, the board was very intentional at that time about balancing service reductions and expansions, looking comprehensively, recognizing that every service expansion costs more money. Right. And so not wanting to take a piecemeal approach to expanding services without then looking at, how are we making sure that we're being fiscally responsible around if we're going to expand service somewhere, where are we going to cut? And so I have wanted to take that conservative approach as well in terms of not proposing service expansions one off without outside of the context of a comprehensive plan. That said, certainly open to your direction. If this is a case where you would like to see us divert from that, then certainly happy to hear that.
First of all, I do appreciate those comments. It makes me nervous to be talking in isolation about any particular thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a system here. We're not here to build up a lot of extra money in the bank. We want to make our money work, but we have to be cognizant of what our funding is now and in future years. And it's awful easy to expand service. It's not so easy to contract service. So it makes me nervous to think that each month we can come here and be discussing a different idea that's going to have a major financial impact. I'd rather, through the year, collect all these ideas, and then at budget time, we have to make the choices. And the choices we made in consideration of all the needs and what's available to meet them. So that's good. I hate to sound like I'm an old Herbert Hoover, but I know it's no fun when you don't have enough money to do what you're supposed to be doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Early.
So I do just have two questions, and thank you, Director Soller, because I do agree that that our budget is definitely top of mind for me anytime we're talking about expansions. And realistically, we did vote yes to expanding. I would also say it was yes, we put it in the budget, and then we'll talk about the plan later. So we'll acknowledge that. I'm curious about this additional vehicle. Literally, would we be buying an additional vehicle, or that's already purchased?
We approved that in the budget, yeah.
We're not buying a new vehicle. No, we already have additional vehicles. Yeah, we currently have 9 vehicles dedicated to bike and transit.
Okay, and all 9 right now though just aren't being used. Is that what we're saying?
We'll have them as like spares. So for example, like if one of them is out of service, we'll use that vehicle.
Okay, I'm going to keep up with you. Okay, mm-hmm. So we have 9 vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
We have 2 spares, 1 spare.
So right now we currently use 4 for Woodland, and then 1 in Islaney, and then 1 in Winter. So
6.
I counted 6 as well. Okay. And so we have 3 additional. Mm-hmm. And so this additional vehicle would then give us basically 2 spares.
Mm-hmm.
And what we would be approving is basically just then the driver cost. The vehicle already exists. Okay, great. Thank you. That's helpful.
Thank you. Director Warren.
Yeah, I just wanted to go back to Autumn's comment that just to clarify that my comment was an and, not an or. And In my opinion, without data and research on it, what I've heard or from constituents is kind of the bookend of the day, the beginning of the day and the end of the day. Like the 7 a.m. and the 6 p.m. or 5 p.m., that's the part that is no longer served during the hours that I have a chance to serve. So I just wanted to clarify that and really appreciate the discussion tonight.
Thank you. All right, any further questions or discussion for our staff team before we move on? Okay, not seeing any. We'll close that item. Thank you, Daisy and Autumn and everyone else for your work on this. We are now on to agenda item number 8, administrative reports. We'll go with 8A, board member verbal reports. Any of my colleagues have a verbal report they would like to share with the board? Dr. Moore.
I would like to invite everybody to Winners on September 28th for Festival de la Comunidad. It's a carnitas festival, the children's area, bands, lots of things to do. It's from 4:30 until 10:30, and we do sell carnitas plates. And if you want to take a picture of it, has the link here. You're all welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Warren. Any of my other colleagues?
I'll just mention, thank you, Josh. The Causeway Connection continues to be great. So that service from Davis to Sacramento, and I think through the summer has served a lot of the interns who are working at the Med Center. So thank you for that. That's pretty super.
Thank you.
Are people able to join the Causeway Connection and hear it with them as it heads out to Davis for that route?
Are you talking about like a... Are you talking about like kind of like a quick trip, like what we used to do?
No, if somebody wanted to go to UC Med and they came here when the bus is dispatched for that route, can they board that bus and go?
Not currently, no. And I'll remind the board that we operate half of those trips and the other half are operated by Sacramento.
I guess what I'm just saying is it wouldn't cost us anything to allow that. I'm only saying it because at the front end, some of the people who regularly take it didn't want to be available to people on the wood board here. I think that was wrong, and I think it ought to be available for someone to board here where the bus is dispatched. I'm not talking about the Sacramento bus. I'm talking about the Yolo buses.
Ooh. Yeah, that kind of sounds like a quick trip. So
why don't I just refer it to staff for consideration and rather asking you to respond to me? Thank you.
I will say that our contract that we have between UC Davis, SACRT, and Yolo TD, both SACRT and Yolo TD are prohibited from making any changes to the route without the consent of the other partners. So it is something that we could look at in future.
Or utility.
I'll just say, yeah, we're very open to that conversation. I think it was more logistical hurdles that were the preventative reasons why that didn't happen. It was under consideration originally. There were some extra costs, and it wasn't clear that anyone was available to pick up those costs. But that conversation would be great to have, particularly if that bus is just empty. And if Brooklyn Davis and available to take passengers, that would be great.
All right, thank you. Do we have any other board member verbal reports? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move to 8B, we'll go to TransDev verbal report. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Chapman. Well, we're going to continue to be doing well. We actually give you a number, give you an idea where we're at. Our total active operators are nearly 8. Within the next 2 weeks, we should be about 80 total active with our total number available. Hopefully, as they come back from leave lapses and such, we'll be up in the rear near 85. Those numbers are higher than what we were pre-COVID. So it's going very well. Last month, we added an additional trainer. So we're training from 6 in the morning until 11 o'clock at night now. So what we're doing is instead of having larger groups, smaller groups, more dedicated time, and not doing 8 weeks of training, trying to get closer to 6 weeks of training. Not cutting any corners. That's just usually the program is usually set for 6 weeks of training.
So it's going well. That's all great news. Thank you.
That's good news.
I will turn to 8C, Executive Director Board Report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a number of, since we haven't met in a couple months, you'll indulge me if I go a bit long tonight. Somebody, Norma can just turn on the Oscar music to get tired of hearing my voice. First, I wanted to start by sharing that our automatic passenger counter installation is ahead of schedule. In fact, the installation is complete. Our team is currently working on technology integration issues, making sure all of the different pieces of technology are talking to each other. So that's an adventure. By Daisy Beard, she'll tell you all about it. Once the different pieces of technology are talking to each other, then we can start collecting data. So we're excited about that. Turning to our finance team, our triennial review starts tomorrow. So the triennial review is something that the Federal Transit Administration does as a condition of receiving federal transit funding. They look at 3 years. The last triennial review happened before I got here, before Daisy was in a leadership role, before Chaz was here. So all of us who are in leadership have never done this before. We're excited to see how it goes, but we're kind of in the midst of a slog of making sure we have all the information available. We anticipate that some of the same issues that came up in our single audit this year will be brought up in the triennial review with regard to procurements and, again, with transition in financial management software. So we're bracing ourselves to go through that over the next few weeks, and David Chaz, our whole team, is doing a lot of work on that. You'll see when we get to the long-range calendar, we'll be talking about those budget workshops that we approved as part of the budget. We want to bring a plan to you for those budget workshops at the October board meeting. A key first step in that was meeting with the city managers and county administrator. We now have a meeting scheduled for October 2nd. It's been a while to get that meeting scheduled and on the books, getting everybody scheduled together. But thanks to the city of Woodland, who's going to be hosting us on October 2nd to talk with them about our goals and objectives for these budget workshops. And then again, we'll be bringing that plan and discussion to you in October. Restoration of express routes from Davis to Sacramento. It was a hot topic during our budget conversation, and it continues to be a hot topic. We are standing room only on most of those buses in the mornings now going into from Davis to Sacramento. We're still currently running just one bus a day of the 43 and the 230, and planning to bring that to three trips, and then three trips bringing back the South Davis Express or 44. We had hoped to bring that service change to you this month, but obviously it did not happen tonight. We realized as we started getting into that the schedule that we had in place before, which is the pre-COVID schedule, doesn't just match what the world looks like in 2024. It was designed for everybody trying to get to downtown Sacramento at 8 a.m. and come back between 5 and 6 p.m., which is just no longer the way people are working. We need more flexibility in terms of trips. We need to spread those trips out both in the morning and afternoon. And also traffic is a lot worse than it was. And so the amount of time it takes to get people from the first stop in Davis to the last stop in downtown Sacramento is the 2018 schedules don't work anymore, 2020 schedules. So we need to take time to go and retime those and also make some schedule changes, which triggers a whole public hearing, not just for the 44, but for all three of those services. So we're currently in the midst of that and collecting public, getting feedback from our existing riders as well as residents in Davis to understand when they're trying to get to Sacramento, what their schedules look like nowadays, so that we can make sure that we have a schedule that works for them. So we're taking a bit more time to make sure we actually roll out the right schedule, a schedule that's really going to work for people. So we've pushed that back to October with the goal of them launching those additional trips in the holiday season, likely not till January 1. So wanted to just share that update with the board. Woodland Transit Center, I wanted to give a shout out to the City of Woodland staff. We've had a lot of issues at the County Fair Mall with homelessness and criminal activity. It's gotten just much, much worse in recent months, and the city has been working very hard to address that, and we've finally seen some significant improvements at the County Fair Mall. So just want to appreciate and acknowledge that. And if you've been hearing from folks about those concerns, we really appreciate it. It's in much better shape. Nonetheless, we are still trying to get out of the County Fair Mall and move to downtown Woodland. And we will be bringing a proposal to you for 100% design of our location, our new location on Court Street between 1st and 3rd. We're bringing that to you, we hope, in November. Finally, I want to share a staffing update. Some of you, I think, already know the news that our marketing communications specialist, Christopher Quanley, moved on after 2.5 years here at the district. We were very sorry to see him go. He was instrumental in creating our Beeline brand and marketing, that campaign that really set us up for the success that we've seen. He also created new brands for YOLO TV, YOLO Bus, and YOLO Commute, overhauled websites for all three, grew our social media following exponentially, and really strengthened our partnerships, engaging at community events with our community partners. So we're so grateful for his service, and we wish him well in his future endeavors. We will soon be posting that position. In the meanwhile, you may notice a dip in our marketing and communications efforts while we work to replace Chris. We are still recruiting for a permanent clerk of the board and executive assistant. We really appreciate having Norma's support, and we're glad that you gave us a 12-month, up to 12-month contract for Norma's assistant. We hope we wouldn't need the full 12 months, and I still hope we won't, but we are still looking for our next clerk of the board. And then actually, after your action tonight on the consent calendar, we'll also be opening the recruitment for our finance and administrative associate position, which was created last year but not filled until now. So we're looking forward to filling that position as well. And finally, pleased to announce that we do have a new senior planner, Lola Torney, who's accepted the position with us. She'll be starting work next month. She's currently a senior transportation planner with VTA in Santa Clara County. But she's got roots in YOLO County, and she has bought a home in Woodland. So she's really coming, and we're very excited to welcome Lola. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Mark. And if my colleagues are okay with that, I'm going to open public comment for Waging Long Range in case anything pops up. So with that, we're going to open public comment on agenda item number 8. Do we have any in-person public comment?
I don't know if we're going to, but yes.
Well,
thank you. Let me just mention this before I forget next month or two. Thank you for mentioning about the service restorations and research continuing on for the express services in Davis and Davis to Sacramento. And it reminded me that on September 18th, I'm going to be at the Solano Transportation Authority chambers for the Capital Corridor Board of Directors meeting. As in the professional work I do, my schedule is no longer Monday through Friday from 1400 to 2230, but my work days are now Thursday through Monday. So with Tuesday and Wednesday being my weekend, it allowed me to open up and get to some other things that I wasn't able to do under my old schedule. And there were some give and takes. There are some things now on my new schedule I can't do that I used to be able to do. So one thing, I've been in contact with Leo Sanchez, deputy director to Rob Patchett at Capital Corridor, is that there are still 4 trains in each direction missing from the Monday through Friday schedule. So there's a lot of service time gaps, and even some of those can help Davis to Sacramento, and eventually with the SR3T, Sacramento-Roseville third track, Davis to Roseville. So we'll see what's happening next Wednesday. Even the agenda isn't even out yet, and I hope to provide a recap at the October meeting as to what happened in September and then announce when the next meeting of that is. But in my latest phone call with Leo, it appears, based on equipment coming in via the Siemens Venture Carts to the San Joaquin service, and then they have to give double-decker equipment back over to the Capital Corridor, that the forecast next schedule change is likely not until March. But let's see what happens on the agenda come Wednesday the 18th, because I think that's going to be very interesting and telling to see how weekday service expansion or restoration of train service will kind of play in tandem with restoration of bus services here at this district between Davis and Sacramento in particular, and how they may parallel the Capital Corridor service restorations as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Any other in-person public comments? Welcome.
Yes, I was disappointed there wasn't a report about the updates on the IA YOLO. It seems that the construction, I can't get Caltrans to even tell me when they released the project out for bid. I had to call the assemblywoman to try to get it out of Caltrans, why a public bid is not being released and not being available for the public to look at. Boggles my mind for transparency. I think you should basically look into that. The safety on the construction, I think there's been neglect. People who drive do not know when they shift lanes, how things are happening. That should be public available. It should be announced more than 24 hours ahead of time. I think your board should basically look into that and why Caltrans isn't making what's happening on construction more available to the public so they can understand. It's very confusing. It's definitely dangerous. I would suggest also you should look into the delays of the bus. The traffic congestion has increased because of the construction. Delays are buses. I think Caltrans should pick up the cost of Caltrans. I think you should look into the cost of why it costs $9 to take the train from Davis to Sacramento. That should be lowered as a mitigation for the traffic congestion caused by the congestion due to the construction. I think that's reasonable. It's $9 one way. Where's the mitigation for the construction for the residents? I'm also concerned that social equity, we don't have a plan for how am I going to fund social equity on the toll lane. If they're going to open up with the toll lane, then what's the funding plan? I've yet to see any discussion. There should be updates on that, even though the toll and the card is doing it. We should have updates on that. That's reasonable. And I think also she should report what's happening at the Capitol Corridor because you put the representatives there, and it's almost impossible for the public to attend and make public comments at those meetings the way it's set up. That's not really very open and transparent and engaging. So I hope you take those together, a number of items for the long-range calendar. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan. Do we have any other in-person public comment?
Okay.
Do we have any online public comment?
We do not have any hands raised online.
Thank you, Alan. So we will close public comment, and I will bring it back to, Judge Burks.
Yeah, apologies. There's just a kind of, I sort of added one quick point since there's nobody here from the Capitol Corridor to officially sort of respond. I mean, those meetings are publicly noticed. People participate from those meetings all the entire length of the 170-mile Capitol Corridor from Placer County to Santa Clara County. Anybody can participate as members of the public and make public comments online, and that's possible. And also, many people do. And additionally, the meetings rotate. From one of the challenges of having a commuter rail line or city passenger on that is 170 miles long is that, that means there's going to be board meetings that rotate from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, and they do. And so the next Capitol Corridor board meeting is, I believe, next week, and the 18th in Sassoon. And so just wanted to, those that might be paying attention that there's ample opportunities for the public to participate in those meetings, and we see many people all across the 170-mile Capitol Corridor route who attend those meetings on a regular basis. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Director Burns. Okay, I'm going to turn to Autumn for Long Range.
Great, thank you, Mr. Chair. All right. So coming up in October, as I alluded to during my executive director's report, we've got our discussion of goals and format for special workshops on the Yolo City budget and funding sources. We'll have an update on internal controls. This is something we have a goal of doing it annually. It's been over a year, just to provide an update on how we're managing internal controls and any updates we have for you in that department. Update on the YOLO Active Transportation Corridors or YATSE project, public hearing and possible action on restoration of the Route 44 and schedule changes to Routes 43 and 230, as I was just talking about. Those are the Davis Express routes. In November, public hearing and possible action on Beeline service changes in winter is also something we were talking about earlier. And then Woodland Transit Center, we want to, as I mentioned, we now have 30% design phase completed. We're doing some outreach and engagement around that over the next 2 months, and then we'd like to bring that to you for a possible approval of 100% design of that location, which would then move us to a place where we could then begin construction. And then finally, Caltrans letter of commitment to the Capital Area Regional Tolling Authority, or CARTA. This was something that was originally on the agenda for tonight. The CARTA board actually kicked that back to Caltrans and CARTA staff for some additional work. So we're now bringing it to you after it's back to the CARTA board. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. So I will turn to the dais.
Yeah.
Director Early.
Yeah. I've got just a couple questions. So I just want to clarify, only because this is what we're committing to. If in the long-range calendar, it says for October, discuss goals and format. When you were chatting or discussing it, it sounded actually like you guys were going to come with even a potential proposed plan based on the city managers. And so I wanted to make sure it's not just discussion. It's also going to be, it sounds like, a proposal of
the yes, plan. Proposed goals and format.
That's okay. Right. Yeah, perfect. I just wanted to make sure I was on the same page with you there.
Yes.
Is this where I could talk about?
Sure.
Okay, perfect.
Anything you want to add?
Thank you. I would also like to add on here that, because we've talked about it a couple times, Director Chapman or Chair Chapman has talked about it as well, which is what potentially could be the plan as we are looking for transportation around both the A's and the Rivercats game. I really want to see it on here because I think it's going to maybe take a while and it's going to actually have a lot of communication, not only with us, but with, you know, police, sheriffs, SACRT, all the things. And the first games are going to be in March.
Okay.
And it literally is, I think, like 6 months worth of games almost every single day. I think there's 30 days in 6 months that won't have a game. So that's going to be a lot of transportation. Yep. It's going to be that. So I think sooner rather than later, and less because they're coming no matter whether we're prepared or not. And so we should probably get prepared. And then the other thing I would at least like to just note here, my colleague that came before me, or Council Member Ledesma, had commented that at some point in time we would get monthly ridership reports or numbers that would just come in our packet. They wouldn't be necessarily presented to us, and I don't know if there's a world in which we could get those back.
We do those monthly in our executive director's report.
Okay.
That right. goes up.
That's,
now. The board made a decision to move those out of the board pack and then into an email at some point about 18 months ago, I want to say. So
the board gets it, but no one else gets it.
No, it goes to everybody who gets the board packet, as well as anyone who signs up for our newsletter to sign up on our website.
Okay, I'll look in a different place. Thank you very much.
Sure.
And the only thing I would just note there, just along those lines, and we heard it tonight, is especially as we get more refined data, I think we should sometime this year, it doesn't have to be like next month or anything, have a discussion about what are our metrics of success. We talked about that, by the way, at the end of last fiscal year, about what kinds of things should we be looking at. But I think the only way we're actually going to address it is if we input it somewhere.
So a couple comments or questions, really. In terms of the Rivercats, the stadium, and I always get Raley's Field, is that
better?
So better. Thank you. I always get it wrong. So what's in our work plan, I just wanted to clarify, is Mark is working with the owners of the stadium to market our existing service that does serve, because we do have service every 15 minutes, literally right on the northern edge of that ballpark. We did not talk about actually changing our service or initiating new service. So I just wanted to clarify in terms of the request from Director Early is that to have an update on our those kind of marketing efforts to market our existing service, or are you suggesting that we have a conversation about whether we would actually want to amend our service?
Yeah, I mean, I would be curious about the actual need. And so whether that is, you know, things are shutting down right at certain times. And so you may want it to be every 15 minutes, but if, you know, again, security and whatnot, you can't even access that road, that might not be helpful. And so I don't know what coordination has happened on our end with WestSAC, just quite frankly.
Again, we have not done any coordination in terms of discussion of potential service changes. We've only constrained it to sort of marketing the existing service.
Yeah.
However, if that is the direction of the board that you want us to look at potential changes to service or need, we can certainly do that. That's just not something we had planned.
Yeah. And what you're hearing from, at least from me, and I don't want to, because we can't go too deep, it's not agendized, would simply be that I'm unsure whether every 15 minutes you're even going to be able to get that, right? And so appreciate the fact that it's like, well, this is our service, and I'm saying your service may be interrupted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we should at least have
some level of review.
Right.
I see the lawyer looking at me.
Sounds like you want to put it on a future agenda.
Yeah. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. Thank you. And I just wanted to clarify what exactly it is you wanted us to talk about. So this is helpful.
Yeah. And maybe there's, you know, I think there's a few other things to kind of dive into on that. It's like, I mean, are there options, right, around, do you have like a pickup at a parking ride where it's like every half hour it's over and drops and comes back from Davis to West Sacramento from winter, whatever that is. Like, I don't know what the range of that is. I just don't know, you know, when, as a public commenter mentioned, Director Frerichs and I are on the CCJPA board, and that was a huge success for the Taylor Swift concerts, the Beyonce concerts, all the games, just, yeah, the Niners games, just, and the ridership was through the roof on that. And it was hugely beneficial. It helped alleviate some of that congestion and a few people's frustrations out there. So I just don't know. I'm not advocating that we need to up service everywhere, but I think we should have a conversation. We kind of put everything out and see where we're at with it. And if there's ways that we can have conversations and maybe the A's pick up us. So I think it'd be great to have that conversation.
Yeah, John Fisher.
Yeah, he's all over. Anybody else for questions or comments on our long range? No long range? All right. With that, we're adjourned. Thank you.
Please note for the record, the meeting has adjourned at 7:57
p.m. Especially